left of the dial. A behind-the-scenes look at Utah issues you care about and politics that affect your family. From a whole different point of view. Each week has 168 hours. This hour is different. Left of the dial with your host, Jeff Bell, on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM. Left of the dial.
Welcome to Left of the Dial. My name is Jeff Bell. Thank you for joining me on this, what seems to be a transitional, quite transitional Saturday afternoon as far as weather goes. Boy, am I happy to be here. I am. Granted, don't get me wrong, I'd be much happier, you know, if we were preempted by a BYU playing and winning another game in the tournament. But I didn't get it. You didn't get it. And I think that we're all going to get over it at some point, right? Because I am a little sleepy today, and I apologize a little bit because I am just a touch under the weather, and I'm trying to stay on top of it. But let's jump right in. I want to give everybody the opportunity to speak on today's topic. We're going to be talking about the Employee Free Choice Act and a few of the obstacles it's seen back in Washington, D.C. Now, Utah is a right-to-work state, and that is, again, what I think one of those obfuscating phrases that makes it seem as though it's worker friendly, as though it is friendly to those of us who have or currently do work in an environment with a lot of different people where one by one we fight for ourselves to do the best that we can, where there are, you know, being in a union or organizing in a way to collectively bargain is actually quite severely and I think dishonestly demonized. And I think that being a worker in Utah and other right-to-work states is nothing more than a misnomer for some people get to make what they want to make and then some people get pushed to the bottom end. If you recall, even just a few years ago, every time the phrase living wage pops up, especially in Utah, there are a group of people that just go absolutely positively mad with a panic and start screaming that the sky is falling. Because a living wage, if people were paid a living wage, that would destroy the fabric of America. And I seem to recall that once upon a time, talking to the folks in my family that are older than I am, that once upon a time in America, you could work a job. You could do your 40 or 50 hours a week. You could own a home. You could have a car. You could feed your family. You could go to the doctor. Those things all happened in one-income families for several decades after World War II. We rebuild our economy. We put it together. And in America, patriotism was something that went further than bumper stickers or wrapping yourselves in the flag and pretending to be patriotic while, on the other hand, making sure that the most Americans that could possibly be screwed to the floor happened. And now those roles have switched. We have what I have always thought was a pretty good bill. It was introduced in 2007 by Senator Kennedy out of Massachusetts, George Miller out of California, and Republican Peter King out of New York. It passed the House of Representatives, 241 to 185, in March of 2007. And it had a majority, more than 50, a majority number of support in the U.S. Senate when it was finally heard in June of 2007, but it was blocked by a Republican filibuster. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about what I think are the advantages toward letting employees, you know, have the opportunity and an easier opportunity to get together as a group, discuss their jobs and how they're being affected and whether or not you think they're being treated fairly. There was a case just last year, or 2 years ago, of a Walmart, I believe it was in Canada. And Canada has obviously slightly different laws than we do. And they were paying so low wages that the people that worked there were not able to make ends meet. They were forcing overtime on their employees. And again, they were not being held to overtime pay laws. They were, you know, rearranging schedules. People were working 80, 90 hours a week. They weren't able to do. If they had a family thing, they were often fired. And so they got together as a group and they unionized. And Walmart, instead of dealing with them in a fashion where they treated their employees like human beings that were actually part of the backbone of the company, they closed the store and moved to another town. Now, think back to the days when maybe your parents could get a job, have a career, work throughout for years and years, stay with a company, that they took care of the company and the company took care of them, and everybody shared in the pride of American capitalism. And then look at coming out of the 70s into the 80s, how suddenly, if a corporate CEO was seen to care about the health and welfare of the people a few steps below them, chances are they were let go, and somebody who was more aggressive, somebody who was more willing to slash, cut, burn the incomes of the American worker was put in his place. Now, as you follow from the 80s until now, and you watch how American men and women, of the majority of American men and women who do that work and work for a living, day in, day out, we are now forced, as a majority of Americans, to work two jobs, two and a half jobs, three jobs per household, to make ends meet barely. Now, I understand that there are folks that live well beyond their means. I understand that a lot of us, you know, myself not included in this particular way, are living on credit, and that we've kind of bored ourselves into half of our own financial problems. But what happened to the day when being an American company meant something to both you as the worker, to the company as the company, and as the company as it took to the people who did the work that made the company profitable? One of the most disturbing and disgusting things I have seen in the last 6-8 months as we have watched these corporate bailouts is that the American taxpayer is forced through their elected representatives to dump billions of dollars on companies who, once they get the check from Washington, D.C., turn around, fire 10, 20, 30,000 employees, and you watch their stock prices go up. Somehow, making unemployment, making that number of people unemployed in America, is seen as such a good business practice that you can rebound a dying company with a bad business model, bad trade practices, bad employee relations, and you fire 10 or 20,000 people, and your stock will rebound, making again 12 people who sit around an oval table, buckets and buckets of money, and when they run that business into the ground, the very people all over the country that they have unemployed are now paying to rescue these companies. American auto manufacturing is probably the biggest offender, in my eyes, of bad anti-American, anti-worker, anti-everything business practices. They operate in a bubble, they make a crappy product, and that is a reflection of corporate management, not of engineers, not of line workers, not of bolters, welders, assemblers. That's five chuckleheads who drive German automobiles trying to tell America what they want. And when we don't like it and we don't buy it, instead of changing that business practice, they just fire tens of thousands of people. They watch their stock rebound. They buy another summer home, another yacht, and another fleet of German cars. And on we go into a downward spiral where Americans are ridiculously overworked, ridiculously underpaid, ridiculously underbenefited. And where does it all end up? I want to hear from you here on Left of the Dial. Give me a call. 575-8255 is the number. 470-KSL-1 down south, 670-KSL-1 up north. The toll-free number is 888-575-8255. And you, as always, your text message is 57500. This is Left of the Dial on KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
And now, and tell Jeff Bell what you think. Get on the air while we're still Left of the Dial on KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back to Left of the Dial. Talking today about the Employee Free Choice Act. Talking about myths and fact about the Employee Free Choice Act. Some of the things you may have heard as you listen to questionable ethics on certain talk radio, certain newspapers, certain CEOs. Employee Free Choice Act. I think the Employee Free Choice Act is a fantastic idea. I think it is overdue. I think it's about time. And I'd like to hear from you why you like it, why you don't. Give me a call. 575-8255 is the number. 670-KSL-1. I believe that's up in Davis County, right? 470-KSL-1 down in Utah County. 888-575-8255 everywhere else. Your text messages at 57500. The Employee Free Choice Act. I am of the opinion that when workers, when employees, when people who go and handle the small to medium cogs of the machine of American capitalism, I believe that when they see an injustice or they see an unfairness or they see something that could be better, they should have a right to gather as a group and to present their grievances with management, with ownership, as a group of people. Now look, I know that there are some screwy union stories that run around out there. I've seen screwy union stories, you know, in my time, throughout my life. I was a member of IATSE number 7 years and years ago, worked there for about 2 years, Denver Convention Center, Denver Center for the Performing Arts. And it was odd. There were some rules and structures and just screwy things that had been so over-negotiated in contract negotiations over the years that they made no sense to somebody coming on new. They made little sense to people that have been there for years, but, you know, when you're negotiating, sometimes things come out a little different than you planned. So I've heard the stories. I've heard the stories of, oh, well, union workers, they only work 10 minutes out of every hour, and they suck down hundreds of thousands of dollars every year in salary and all of that. And it's patently untrue. It is patently untrue. And then when you look at the debacle of the bailouts that we've seen in D.C. over these last few months, and you listen to the testimony of corporate executives for these giant conglomerates that have run themselves into the dirt, that have basically threatened and jeopardized the global economic system by their constant bad behavior, by their unethical behavior, and by the very simple fact that they run a business with the entire intention of profiting a small group of between 10 and 20 people. I mean, that's really what it runs down to. When you look at the former CEO of Home Depot, who in the short time that he was on board as CEO, the changes that he implemented ended up in a 32% profit loss, I believe. I may be wrong on that number. This is just off the top of my head. But a gigantic profit loss for Home Depot. Home Depot became unprofitable, I think, for the first time since open. And he lost them billions of dollars. And so when they fired him, he took with him tens of millions of dollars in golden shoot severance money. And I don't think he'd been on the job for more than a year. Now you, John Q. Citizen, making your $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year, You screw something up that bad to where you're losing maybe thousands of dollars, hundreds of dollars. Maybe you spilled a Coke on somebody's keyboard and you get canned. Are you going to walk out with a check worth millions and millions and millions and tens of millions of dollars? No, you're not. So we look at the bonus structure that they've put together for the AIG deal over the last, you know, few weeks. And they're saying that these people, they're owed them in contract. These bonuses are contracted. And yet I have seen pilots, I have seen members, you know, or members of the UAW that build cars. I have seen, you know, how many different groups of workers on every socioeconomic scale, but especially those men and women who are members of a union, take pay cut after pay cut, benefit cut after benefit cut, everything, time after time. And they're contracted for benefits that just a handful of these AIG bonuses would cover. And yet when you talk about unions, the scream is, oh, unions are destroying America. And yet here we see unions busted time after time after time with lie after lie after lie by certain heavily lobbied members of Congress and state senates and state legislatures and state governments and chambers of commerce from one coast to another. And yet the minute you pass that magical line of about $250,000 a year, contracts start to mean something. A contracted bonus for losing millions and millions upon billions of dollars, suddenly it's a big legal deal. But it doesn't matter when you could take an airline pilot making about 120 grand a year and strip a quarter, a third, half of his pay. An auto worker making $60,000 to $70,000 a year, doesn't matter, he has a contract, he's a union guy. So you cut his pay and you cut his benefits. Where is that line drawn? Why do the beloved Republicans in my family who make about what I do, which is well below that $250,000 a year line, constantly vote to take care of 3% of the United States population and keep voting for people that crap on them time after time after time? That's what I want to know. Give me a call. 575-8255 is the number. 888-575-8255 is the toll free. This is Left of the Dial on KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Because Jeff Bell is Left of the Dial, and he's exclusively on KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back to Left of the Dial. We're talking the Employee Free Choice Act today. Pardon me again, I'm a little under the weather. And the weather looks like it's going to be all on top of us in just a few. A lot of wind, a lot of goo. We were gonna burn some leaves out in the backyard today for the kids. And I raised the specter of wind and fire being a really bad idea, especially in a backyard surrounded by a very old wooden fence. I could just see it. We could take the whole neighborhood out. Once the fences come down, we just have a big park behind everybody's house. A park of fire. So we're talking the Employee Free Choice Act today, and I've been meaning to get to this one for a while. I keep thinking that we're going to see some action on it in Congress, and I'm going to miss my opportunity. But of course, Congress being Congress, it's pretty much set still. Now, I think the Employee Free Choice Act is a good idea. Now, I have not been a union employee since, I think, 1993, 94. I mean, it's been a long time. And I enjoyed the experience. I did think it was a little different because I come from Utah, and I was out of state when I joined my first union. And, yeah, there were some screwy bits and some weird aspects that now that I'm older, wiser, and better looking, I've come to recognize is the fact that when you negotiate for something so heavily that punctuation in the sentence becomes a point of contention, sometimes you end up with, you know, a 6.5 minute break at the 7-hour mark And everybody goes, those screwy unions. And the truth is it's just something that came through arbitration. And everybody should have been mature enough to probably not have it there. And yet there it is. And when you get a 6-minute break and you fight like some unions do for everything they can get, that's what happens. All right, I'm going to run to the phones really quick. I've got Jerry on line one from Salt Lake City. Jerry, go ahead.
Thank you. I'd like to give you two examples of something I've heard and have you tell me if it sounds accurate or not, one in the automobile industry and one in the airline industry.
Okay.
Let me take the airlines first. My understanding is the reason Southwest has been successful overall and profitable is because they pay their pilots $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year, and the reason that Delta had to go into bankruptcy to break the contracts with their pilots that were making $190,000 and $200,000 and finally get their wages and salaries down to a fairer level, that's what's caused them to have a rebound and to be more successful, and it did go to the pilots' wages at the different airlines.
Well, let me
give you the auto too.
Well, I want to do that one first because right, I don't want to get them mixed up. So okay. We'll take them one at a time.
Okay.
Now, my understanding, and funny enough, I used to be a bartender at a place in Denver where the pilots, when they transitioned from one plane to another, they'd stay in the hotel I worked at.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've actually had a lot of talks on this, both with management and with pilots. And now, look, I do think that at some point, if a company is failing, that I think employees and management ought to take a look at what everybody's making and maybe make some adjustments. Now, I look at the business model of Southwest Airlines versus, you know, the business model of Delta. And I see in Southwest, you know, okay, payroll's down. That is going to help the profit margin.
That's the biggest single cost.
I can't disagree with that, and that is not the single biggest cost.
The single
biggest cost is fuel and maintenance.
I've heard that the salaries of your employees are the biggest cost in a business.
Well, they can be, but I'm in the airline industry, it is fuel and maintenance.
Okay.
So when you look at that, you know, like, okay, some people think that when unions get too big, it's painful and hurts a company. And I could see where that comes across. And I could see sometimes where unions maybe could be a little less aggressive or could be a little bit more moderate. But then I also look at, when you look at the top 10, 15 people, when Delta went through their big reduction and pilots lost half their pay and half their benefits, you still had millions and millions and millions of dollars going to executive bonuses when that whole airline was headed for bankruptcy.
100%, but what turned it around?
What? I don't think they're all that turned around.
Well,
I don't think that they're that far in the black.
They're out of bankruptcy now.
Well, sure, they're out of bankruptcy now. They've cut routes. They got rid of some older planes. They cut.
Well, it's just,
you know, pilots.
I mean,
they've abused.
But
they've,
no pilot should have been making 200 at Delta when they were making 100 at, or 90 at Southwest, in my opinion.
Well, so then you think we ought to maybe put a cap on what people make?
Well, I don't know about a cap. All I'm saying is that I agree with you. The management maybe didn't negotiate as carefully as should have. Maybe the unions pulled some things that maybe shouldn't have been done. All I'm saying is I think that $200,000 for pilots at one airline and $100,000 at another airline, something's fishy.
Well, you've got, okay. I mean, and I can't talk you out of that. And I can't talk you out of the mindset that says, hang on just a sec.
Okay.
Give me one second, Jerry.
Okay.
When you say, maybe management didn't negotiate properly, or maybe the unions pulled something,
yeah,
that shows me kind of where you're coming from and where your opinion on it all is.
Well, that's where it is on that situation. That just looks to me like it's pretty obvious. That's what turned things around, was being able to break.
Well, and
those,
that, you know what? And if,
salary
and, if,
contracts.
And if all you're going to listen to is news in 30-second chunks, of course that's what it looks
well, okay.
like. But
let
when
me,
you dig a little deeper
on
and you see all of the other changes that had to be made at the time.
Okay, I'll make this one short.
Okay.
I have heard, you tell me if it's false or not, that the reason GM has gotten into so much trouble, one of the biggest reasons is because the hourly wage is $80 an hour, and Toyota builds a car in Kentucky, whereas Detroit's built in Detroit is where General Motors building them, and their average wage is $40 or some odd an hour, and that's pretty darn good wages. And again, that it's that terrible in union-infused level of wages in GM that hurt them so badly. Now, obviously, management of GM done terrible things. Those top 10 or 15 and those $10 million or more a year sure. salaries are ridiculous. But I don't think that Toyota should be paying their workers an average of $40 an hour maybe, whereas GM's paying them $80. And if that's not a big problem, I don't know what is.
Well, let me go ahead and address that for you, Jerry. And it's pretty easy to lay out. That $70, $80 an hour number is not accurate. When you look at that, what it is, and I hate to even put it this way, it is a Republican congressperson screwy math system to fight against complete accuracy. That $70 to $80 an hour number came from taking in the pension benefits of previous employees that had been working since Socrates was teaching at the Colosseum, all the way until now. And you add in those benefits that had been promised, that had been paid into for employees that had already come, done their 20, 30, 40, and left. And then those pension funds were raided by the corporation to keep themselves looking as profitable as possible until all that money was gone. And their bad management and their bad business style caught up with them and crashed the company. You know, when you look at, American guys in the UAW probably make more than people who are working for, you know, non-union jobs in Toyota, Subaru, whatever. By about, if I recall, and I'm so sorry I don't have the numbers pulled up on me right now. There's so many other things. But you know, by a factor of maybe $6, $7, $8, $10, $12, depending on how long they've been there. I mean, that's the disparity of it all. And when it comes down to taking all of these other things that have happened in the past and then adding them together, you know, as a dollar figure, and then dividing that out among the current working, that's how they came to that $70, $80 an hour thing. Because that's not what they make. It's not what they make. So where do you find that honesty? You know, the thing is, you say $40 an hour, that's a pretty good wage. Hey, in most of America, with one income at $40 an hour, that's barely making ends meet. I mean, it's you factor in all the food, gas, everything else that a family's got to put up with, and, you know, your average family of five, and that'll barely make ends meet. In some places, it's much better. You know, $40 an hour in Utah will get you a pretty good way. $40 an hour in California or somewhere on the East Coast where everything is so ridiculously expensive. That's all I'm saying. You got to break it down dollar by dollar. Now, if GM were making a great car that people wanted to buy, and they were making models, and they were taking care of their money, and they were running an actual business as opposed to a personal piggy bank and profit center for the shareholders and the corporate management structure, and siphoning off hundreds of millions of dollars that way, this wouldn't even be a talk. This is bad management, not bad workers. That's my opinion. Give me a call, let me know yours. This is Left of the Dial. 575-8255 is the number. Toll free statewide, 888-575-8255. You're listening to Left of the Dial on KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM, 1160 AM.
Never heard before. Left of the Dial with Jeff Bell on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Every week here on Left of the Dial, the same thing happens. I go through two or three blocks with hardly a call, and then with less than 7 minutes to go, my board lights up and they all pile in. So everybody that's on hold, I'm doing my best to get to you. You got to call in a little sooner. I'm sorry. It's just how it is. I have time limits. Really quick, we've been talking about the Employee Free Choice Act, and of course, you know, that brings up unions, and of course, the minute that we talk about unions, we start hearing the stories of how, you know, these poor CEOs that are only making hundreds of billions of dollars or millions of dollars a year are so picked on by those pesky employees that make the product, that makes the profit, that makes the CEO all of those millions and millions of dollars a year. Those pesky employees. What are they thinking? So, That's what we've been talking about today. In just a minute, I'm going to get to a couple of the more important myths and facts about the Employee Free Choice Act, because as I see it, educated audience is an educated audience, and that's my goal. But really quick, I want to run to Mike from West Jordan. Mike, is you're a captain with Southwest, Mike?
Yeah, that's correct. I just wanted to make a comment regarding unionization.
Did I blow it?
Well, no, you didn't. Your caller blew it. First of all, Southwest Airlines has the highest amount of the percentage of union workers of any other airline in the country. 87% of the workers are unionized. And our pay is almost identical, was, when Delta went into bankruptcy. There was no pilot at Southwest Airlines making $90,000 a year. We're the highest compensated pilots in the entire country right now.
And you guys are, Southwest is in pretty good shape right now.
We're the ones making money. It's the management that messed it up. Talk to any Delta pilot and he'll tell you the management that messed it up.
So. There is nothing that a Delta pilot likes better than talking about how a management messed it up. Okay. And that goes back 15 years when I was a bartender and I used to talk to these guys when they were going from the 727 round dial to the 727 square dial.
Yep. That's correct.
Well, all right,
that's
Mike.
My comment.
I appreciate it. I like hearing stuff like that. So, take that. All right, the myths and facts of the Employee Free Choice Act. Now, these are just a few, and you can go out on the internet and you can find the bits and pieces and you can research this for yourself, or you can listen to my caller a couple back and just think that anytime you hear the word union, you got Jimmy Hoffa out there busting somebody's kneecaps with a bat. You know, there's a reason Jimmy Hoffa disappeared. It's because people don't want to do business that way. You know, and he's one guy out of millions. But the first one, and the worst one, is the whole secret ballot thing. That if you were paying attention to the Utah legislature this year, you watched a few of our members up there all from the Republican Party just go nuts about secret ballot elections, and they should have secret ballot elections. And the biggest myth and the biggest lie purported by opponents of the Employee Free Choice Act is that this would get rid of secret ballot elections. But the Free Choice Act does not get rid of the elections. And under the proposed legislation, under this act, workers would then get to choose the union formation process. They could either do elections, they could do majority sign-up. Okay, what it does is it prevents an employer in manipulating the system to influence an election outcome. And if you don't think that happens, then you are clearly both ignorant and in the dark on it. Now, the second big myth is that, you know, legal recognition of a union has traditionally been achieved through the secret ballot elections. Just how a person votes for somebody to go to office. Now, union elections that involve secret ballots are in no way like your political elections. Basically, your free speech rights as an employee are stomped on, and employers have, and have done this for years, and I have been a part of it at a couple of different places I've worked. They go in and they coerce and they threaten and they cajole. And that to me is, if you're going to be threatened for trying to stick up for yourself, and in my case, and in a lot of your cases, so that I could feed my family day after day and not have to work 100 hours a week, I'm sorry. How is it not American to take care of the people that make you the money? That's my opinion this week. This has been Left of the Dial on KSL News Radio. Catch up with me all week at jmbell.org. That's where the blog is. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and MySpace. Drop me an email. Give me a call. I'm happy to hear from you. This is Left of the Dial on KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.